Rick Moore is not here today. Sorry about these seconds of dead air. This is Sean McCord stepping in for the wake-up call and our special annual Oscar show. Support today is coming from the backyard of the university's culinary secret at the end of Elliwood Avenue across from Para Coffee. The backyard invites you to enjoy outdoor patio seating in their heated tent provided by Commonwealth Event Company. The backyard has a seasonal menu and seasonal brews on tap and is available for private events. For more info, it's 434-202-8215. 8215, or you can find the backyard on Facebook. Well, off to a flying start this morning. We are standing in a very crowded studio. I see, five, six, seven, eight, I don't know, maybe a dozen people in here. We're going to be talking about the Academy Awards and the Oscars with our usual guests, for those of you who tune in regularly. And we have a special guest at the top of the hour, none other than Jody Kielbasa, director of the Virginia Film Festival. Say hi, Jody. Okay, now say it when your mic is on.
good morning, Sean. Good morning, everyone.
All right, thank you. And Jody, we brought you in here today to talk about a very special event that's happening here in Charlottesville tonight called Oscar Night America. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, that's right. We're one of 51 charities across the United States that are officially sanctioned by the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences to present an Oscar party benefiting the Virginia Film Festival and the Paramount Theater. So you get to help out two charities for the price of one. And it's going to be tonight starting at 6:30 at the Paramount Theater. We are going to be screening the largest live high-def screening of the Oscars in the state of Virginia on that spectacular Paramount screen. I got to tell you, we did this last year, and we had over 600 people in attendance. And, you know, you're just absolutely blown away by watching the Oscars in high def on a screen that size. I mean, it was remarkable. And we have about 15 restaurants that are participating, some of Charlottesville's finest that are offering some incredible food. We're serving only Virginia wine. I think we have easily a half dozen or more wineries that are participating as well, and soda and popcorn. And the Academy Awards are shipping, the Oscars are shipping, the official Oscar program, the very one that everybody at the Oscars themselves will have in their seat waiting for them. Last year's was beautiful. It had a silver embossed of the Oscars on the front, image of the Oscars on the front, and color photos of the best pictures. Absolutely incredible. All tonight for one ticket price of $45, and you're able to walk up if you're still considering going. We encourage everybody to go down there.
No, wait. Now, normally, this sells for $200, or $100, but now, for a special low-time offer, how can we do this at $45?
Well, you know something, we're fortunate. Virginia National Bank has come in and underwritten this event for us, so we're able, you know, part of our goal is to make this relatively accessible to the community so they can come out and enjoy this event. And again, you know, unlimited food and wine and soda and popcorn and the official Oscar program. We're also going to be raffling off items there, so you have the opportunity to
stay a little closer to the mic there, Jody.
Thank you. We're have this opportunity to win some special prizes during the evening, and also silent auction. We have the official Oscar jacket and hat. We have the ability to win a special high-def screening of an NFL football game at the Paramount Theater for up to 200 of your friends, which is pretty nifty.
That's awesome.
So, a lot of fun stuff.
And you said local restaurateurs are coming in and bringing some of their food so you can sample food.
Last year, the food was outstanding. Yeah, it was absolutely amazing. I mean, these restaurants put on their absolute best for everybody there, and there was so much food and so much wine, and it was an incredible evening. And, you know, I got to say, it's just really fun. We also have Oscar ballots there. You can vote on Best Picture or Best Actor, you know, Best Actress. So it's just a great evening.
And so we should put on our – the ladies should put on their best gowns and their high heels, and the men should put on their top hats and tails.
Well, you know, we had a lot of people dressed in tux and formal wear or cocktail attire last year. But, you know, we also had some people that showed up in character. We had the dude walking around. This guy last year was wearing a ratty bathrobe, and he had a pack of Marlboros, and he had the Jeff Bridges hair and beard going on. He was dead ringer for Jeff Bridges. At one point, I looked up, and I thought, oh, my God.
Did he rush the stage when Jeff got announced for his Oscar?
No, but he was pretty prominent throughout the evening, along with several Marilyn Monroes that were walking around and some really fun over-the-top costuming that was going on. So, you know, it was a real celebration, and again, just really fun to be able to do this. It's a huge honor. We were featured in Variety
on Friday
with a photo of the Paramount Theater. I mean, this is national press, and they were. It was an article about Oscar Night America across the country, benefiting these 51 charities of which we're a part. But they also interviewed me and talked about Charlottesville and the Paramount Theater and the Virginia Film Festival, which was great, and you know, significant press for Charlottesville. And again, this is an opportunity. This serves as a benefit for two great charities in town, the Virginia Film Festival and the Paramount Theater. We do a tremendous amount of community outreach and education programs, and it's benefits like this that allow us to continue to offer that to the community here in Charlottesville. So we do hope everybody will come out and support. And again, that's why we try to keep this ticket price down very low at only $45. That includes all the food, the wine, the soda, the popcorn, the screening, and of course that official Oscar program, which is a collector's item. I think last year they were offering them for sale for $20 alone on eBay. Yeah. So, fun night.
Okay, one more thing. So tell us what happens during the commercials. We're going to be broadcasting the commercials on the HD screen too.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to do some of the commercials, but we're going to have MCs from Charlottesville Newsplex, John Rogers and Tara Wheeler. They're going to be coming out. They're going to be doing the raffles and the auction prizes in between. We've got some other celebrities that are going to be coming up, local celebrities, and they're going to be entertaining in between those commercial breaks as well. And there's a red carpet entrance. You can have your photo taken. You'll be interviewed from a number of other people from Charlottesville Radio Group, and just, again, a lot of fun.
So we're going to have our own local paparazzi there.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Okay, so this is the annual Oscars show where we have local film buffs and historians and critics come in and talk about their favorites and talk about who they want to win, who is actually going to win. You have a few films that you want to highlight?
Well, you know, I think for Best Picture, I honestly believe that King's Speech is going to take it. I think if there was a possibility of an upset, just like the Academy last year went with Hurt Locker, they might choose to move in a different, fresher direction with Social Network. But I think King's Speech is going to win it. I think Colin Firth will take it for Best Actor for King's Speech. And my hope is that Natalie Portman gets it for Black Swan, which, of course, opened this year's Virginia Film Festival back in November. We're thrilled to be able to screen that as the opening night film, and at least sentimentally, I'd love to see her get that nod this year.
Yeah, and we screened a handful of Academy nominees at the festival this year.
Absolutely. 127 Hours was screened that evening as well. A number of films that are nominated throughout the Academies this year as well.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Jody, stick around as long as you want. We're going to turn to our other guests this afternoon. I'm going to talk about their picks for the film.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you, Jody. Always a pleasure to see you. Okay, we're going to go across the line and have you all introduce yourselves. And let's start here on my left with Adam Greenbaum. Adam, let's make sure your mic is working.
Oh, hey, Sean.
And Adam, remind us who you are and why you're here.
Sure. I own the Visualite Cinema in Stanton and Vinegar Hill Theater in Charlottesville. And I'm far less knowledgeable than any of these others, but I get to see people's reactions to the movie, so that helps me a little bit.
Excellent. Okay, Adam, looks like I'm not going to see you for the rest of the show. And then immediately to your left is Ben Knuckles. Ben?
Hi, Ben Knuckles, reporter for the Associated Press and longtime movie critic for WNRN's own 91 Seconds on Film.
Excellent. And speaking of 91 Seconds on Film, next to you?
Hey, it's Tom Dumontier, assignment editor and film reviewer for 91 Seconds on Film. It's a pleasure to be here, Sean.
Terrific. Now, those of you who tune in every year, Adam, Tom, and Ben are our regular guests, and we've added another voice, a couple of other voices into the mix. Joe, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi there. I'm Joe Babarski. I'm the event coordinator for the Virginia Film Festival, and I am a mentor down at Lighthouse Studios. I've got a film studies degree, which means I like movies. It also means I can write you a 25-page paper about Dutch Tilt in The Third Man.
but you didn't get that film studies degree from UVA, did you?
I didn't, unfortunately.
You went to some little tiny East Coast college?
I went to Yale.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
I'm a townie through and through.
All right.
And a Wahoo at heart.
Okay, and then a couple other voices. Why not? Will, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Will Smith. I do some 91 Seconds on Film for the station.
Along with Tom and along with Ben.
Yep. I'm Kim Lowe. I do film reviews for 91 Seconds on Film.
Okay, Kim, we're going to have to get a little closer to the mic there.
I'm Kim Lowe. I do movie reviews for 91 Seconds on Film.
Okay, that was nice and close. Okay, and support for NRN today is also coming from Dixon Disposal. Dixon reminds you that you can reduce household garbage by purchasing products with reuse and recycling in mind. Small changes in your lifestyle can keep our planet green for years to come. When Dixons pick up your trash, they sort it and separate it for recycling. You can help keep the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. More is at 434-978-2111 or DixonDisposal.com. All right, let's jump right into this. We're going to save the just like the Academy Award, just like the actual broadcast. We're going to save the really big ones for the end. We're going to move our way towards Best Picture.
In other words, we're going to discuss the major categories when everybody is asleep, just like at the Oscars.
Well, let's hope they're not asleep.
Probably people wake up over the course of this broadcast.
Not right. If you're watching in Hawaii.
Well, okay, so let's jump in. Let's start with the leading actor, and Tom. Do you have a few things you want to, few favorites, few spoilers you want to put in there about leading actor?
Well, let me first off read the nominees.
Oh, yeah, that's a very good idea.
The nominees for performance by an actor in a leading role: Javier Bardem in Beautiful, Jeff Bridges in True Grit, Jesse Eisenberg in The Social Network, Colin Firth in The King's Speech, and James Franco in 127 Hours as Aaron Ralston.
Tom, you know, you've got a voice for radio.
Oh, my God. Anyway, this, as Jody stated earlier, is pretty much a done deal. Colin Firth for King's Speech, you know, the ultimate British monarch buddy movie this year. And, who doesn't like the story of a stuttering noble trying to keep his country together as communism swoops in?
I know, but it's been done.
Yeah, but... There's a way that Colin Firth affects his performance in a way, but it's very genuine. It's articulate and
or inarticulate, as the case may be.
Right. I mean, he's articulating the inarticulate, which is neither here nor there. But I think, you know, Jeff Bridges, it's a little bit of a marbly-mouthed dude goes back to the 19th century for me performance, and I think the closest. Second will probably be Jesse Eisenberg for The Social Network. But we always talk about Oscar snubs here, and I really liked Ryan Reynolds in Buried and thought that was a very strong film. Of course, it's just one actor in a coffin the entire film.
Right.
But I thought that was one of the strongest performances this year.
Well, it is kind of an underground favorite.
Yes.
Okay, now you sort of passed over Jeff Bridges, but doesn't the Academy like to give actors Oscars 2 years in a row? Think Tom Hanks, think...
No.
Okay.
No, that's very rare. Extremely rare. And it's very difficult to win two leading actor Oscars. Very few have done it.
Wasn't it only Tom Hanks and Spencer Tracy?
Kim, we're going to have to get a little closer to that.
Wasn't it only Tom Hanks and Spencer Tracy who ever accomplished that feat?
Back to back, that it's entirely possible. Like I said, to win multiple Oscars is extremely rare. Recently, Denzel Washington has won twice, but one was supporting and one was lead. Kevin Spacey has won in the leading and supporting categories. Bridges had he deservedly won last year for what was. I don't know if it's a greater performance. It was a different performance. It was one with more more emotion and range in Crazy Heart. He's a great actor. I'm happy to see him nominated again, because I thought that he took a role that John Wayne played and brought it back to earth, made it grittier, if you will. But he's just along for the ride this time, as is everybody else in this category. James Franco agreed to host the show because he knew he wasn't going to win. So he knew he wouldn't have an awkward moment where he was essentially presenting the award to himself.
So he wouldn't have to run off stage, go sit in his seat, and then look surprised and run back on stage? You don't think that's going to happen?
He's got the energy for it. I mean, he's involved in everything. Didn't he take 62 hours in a semester at UCLA when he was studying there? So he could feasibly do it.
There is something to be said about an actor who carries an entire movie where you're just looking at his face for 90 minutes. And, I mean... I didn't feel bored or, I didn't disbelieve his performance one bit, but I mean, against worthy, the other people in the category, there's no way.
It's not that when I say he has no chance to win, it's not that I don't think he deserves it. I've enjoyed James Franco immensely over the years in Milk and other films. He's a tremendous actor, and he has an engaging personality, and obviously he does interesting things with art and literature. It's not about who's better. It's just about who's going to win, and we all know who's going to win, and we can't say that Colin Firth isn't a worthy victor, but he's a juggernaut.
Joe,
Stuttering Monarch is a juggernaut.
Joe, I see you're nodding your head. You have something to add?
I mean, to me, this is where Colin Firth's performance is where the King's Speech shines, and this is the category where the hype for the King's Speech is deserved. And I mean, in fact, Colin Firth last year for A Single Man, I thought could have absolutely deserved the Oscar, and I think that it's well deserved here to break down and sort of deconstruct his performance to achieve that such sort of heartfelt, honest, convincing portrayal as someone struggling with a stutter and with their social position. Absolutely. And then, to me, for all the reasons that you all have said, James Franco would be my other sort of go-to choice for this one in terms of someone whose performance absolutely carried a really strong film.
And the good news for those of you who will be attending the party tonight to watch the Oscars, you can expect a gracious and eloquent acceptance speech from Colin Firth. I'm not sure that watching the Oscars on a massive high-def screen makes it any better when people thank their agents.
All right, let's stay in the male actor category and move on to supporting actor. We've got Tom. You want to do the honors again, since you did it so smashingly last time?
Sure. Performances by an actor in a supporting role: Christian Bale in The Fighter, John Hawkes in Winter's Bone, Jeremy Renner in The Town, Mark Ruffalo in The Kids Are All Right, and Jeffrey Rush in The King's Speech.
All right.
Adam? I was looking.
Well,
Adam, go ahead.
I think if there's any category that's a gimme, it's this one. I mean, Christian Bale, I can't imagine anyone even coming close to winning. His performance was stunning. Someone said he looked like the crack he was selling. it was something.
Every time I see Christian Bale, it reminds me of that Kafka story, The Hunger Artist. I think in The Machinist and in this, he like takes off a tremendous amount of weight, and then you see him as buff and built in The Dark Knight, and he just takes on this just unbelievable physical strain in the performance. And I think if you're going to talk about Christian Bale in this performance, you know, a lot of people, you either like this performance or you think he's just hamming it up and it doesn't ring true. But I think at large, the Academy believes it to...
If you see the real guy, he's not hamming it up.
Yeah,
he's helped himself. Gothic. He's helped himself during the awards campaign season by appearing with the real Dick or Dickie Eklund, who has proved to the world that Christian Bale wasn't overacting at all. If anything, he underplayed it, which may sound shocking, but the guy is extremely colorful and seemingly nonstop energy.
And I'm pretty sure that Christian Bale is a shoe-in for this one, but if anybody else got it, I personally would like to see Renner get it. Here's why.
Battle of Boston.
Because the Boston accent is one of the hardest things to pull off if you're not from Boston. Renner's from L.A., and, I mean, he just completely encapsulated that demographic, like, from Boston. And I think he totally killed it in The Town.
The accent was fine. I was just when I was reading these nominees this morning, I thought, oh yeah, he is nominated again. I forgot. But and The Town was a movie that had some tremendous ensemble acting in it, and I thought you could have easily have nominated John Hamm,
right?
For playing the FBI agent, or the late great Pete Postlethwaite, who Steven Spielberg once called the greatest actor in the world.
I would agree with that.
A wonderful swan song, as he was clearly ill when he did the part. His body was ravaged.
We did all of Inception in a bed.
So there you go. All right. I forgot he was in Inception because I was so
you didn't dream it. It was real.
I was so mentally checked out by that point. I was wondering if it was raining outside or something by the time he showed up.
Kim, you look like there's something you want to add.
Well, if there was a chance for an upset, I would really like to see Jeffrey Rush take this.
Mm-hmm.
I do think Bale has a lock on this category, but I thought Jeffrey Rush really, I actually was more moved by his performance than I was by Colin Firth's. Might be a sacrilege on this panel, but I really thought that without Jeffrey Rush in that performance, I don't think the movie would have held.
Well, he had one of my favorite scenes in the movie. There were a couple of scenes in the King's Speech that I really liked. The rest of the movie, we'll get to that. But Jeffrey Rush had a great scene early in the King's Speech where he tries out to play Richard. He's doing Richard III. I don't know what play he's trying out for, but he's playing a bad actor, and he's a great actor playing a bad actor. And you see all of his insecurities in that scene, and you understand that speech therapy is what he's good at, but it wouldn't have been his choice in life. That was a great scene. The other great scene was Guy Pearce as King Edward VIII dressing down Colin Firth as his brother. Guy Pearce, what an underrated actor he is, and he really brings a lot of energy to that movie. Yeah. I would have liked to see him nominated in this category.
Strong performance in Animal Kingdom as well.
All right,
By the way, my choice in this category is John Hawkes for Winter's Bone. Now, I haven't seen it, but John Hawkes is fantastic.
He should have won some
awards for Deadwood, so I think he's probably the best.
Winter's Bone is an incredible film, and I was actually just thrilled to see him nominated because from start to finish, I think thoroughly affecting, gorgeous, depressing and beautiful. So in he's a very terrifying teardrop. He's this, you know, meth dealer with his namesake tattoo next to his eye, but it is an amazing performance and one of several great ones in the film.
Okay, yeah, and how surprising for a movie called Winter's Bone to actually bring in audiences over the summer. I mean, it was just
they wanted
terrific.
To cool down. Okay, so we've talked about everybody except...
It's called counter-programming, Adam. You should know.
We've talked about everybody except Mark Ruffalo.
Why hasn't
anyone mentioned Mark Ruffalo?
Should we?
He's a decent actor.
He sneaked in there, didn't he? It was a movie everybody liked. He's an actor people like. I still love him, and You Can Count on Me. That was, I think that's one of the great performances in recent times. This was good. I liked him. He played the guy warts and all. He certainly wasn't he didn't try to be likable, which Mark Ruffalo is always a kind of an earnest actor, I think, a bit of a sad puppy dog sort of guy. But this time he was edgy.
He was cute. Come on.
It may have been one of those like who else nominations, like this guy.
Okay. Gentlemen, ladies, sit back, take a breath.
Well, you have to give credit to Fox Searchlight for pushing all the actors, not just Annette Bening.
Okay, all right. Take a breather. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley, mostly cloudy with chance of showers today with a high 60 to 65, 65 to 70 Lynchburg and Richmond. Cloudy with a chance of showers tonight with a low 45 to 50, Richmond 50 to 55. Showers and thunderstorms and gusty winds tomorrow with a high 70 to 75, 63 to 68 in the valley. Right now in the valley, it's fair and 52, cloudy and 54 in Lynchburg and 56 in Richmond. And in Charlottesville, it's fair and 52. And support for WNRN today is also coming from Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, coming to Charlottesville Sunday the 14th and Monday the 15th. It's the Banff Mountain Film Festival, featuring mountain adventure and culture, paddling and biking with different features on the 2 days. This year's beneficiary is the Ivy Creek Foundation, bringing nature and environmental education to the community. It will happen at the Paramount Theater in Charlottesville. Tickets are at the Paramount and at Blue Ridge Mountain Sports stores. I gotta think there's something wrong with those dates. Okay, we're back on the air with the Oscar show. And we've talked about the men. Let's move to the distaff side and talk about the leading actresses. And you know what, Kim? I want you to step in here first. And would you like to read the nominees?
Sure.
For leading actress.
Sure. The nominees for leading actress are Annette Bening in The Kids Are All Right, Nicole Kidman in Rabbit Hole, Jennifer Lawrence in Winter's Bone, Natalie Portman in Black Swan, and Michelle Williams in Blue Valentine.
All right, you've got the mic. You have a favorite in here, one that you think ought to win and one you think probably will win.
I think Natalie Portman will win the Oscar for Black Swan, but my personal favorite was Annette Bening.
Mm-hmm.
And The Kids Are All Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Gentlemen, want to jump in?
I've only seen one.
Will.
So that was... That was Black Swan, so I'm all for it.
So you're all for that one?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think her portrayal of, like, the quiet mental unraveling was just
quiet.
Well, I mean, she had to keep
oh,
it.
Oh yeah, it was subtle.
Oh come on.
The voices in her head were loud, but well, she yeah, herself I mean, her, was quiet.
It was a loud mental unraveling, but she had to keep it so inside because of the role she was playing in the ballet.
You okay? Yeah, you must have been watching a different movie.
You have a very puzzled look on your face there, Ben.
Well, I thought her neck muscles did a hell of a lot of acting. You know, she was just acting really. I think the Academy tends to favor performances where you can see.
So this is the quantity of performance?
Yes, the quantity of performance. The most acting. She certainly wins for that. They favor performances where you can see. Where you can see the actor sweating, where you can see, as someone put it, where you can see the armpit stains. Tilda Swinton and Michael Clayton was an example of that. Although she was much more subtle than some performances that have been honored over the years.
I don't think it was meant to be a subtle character. I mean, these are ballet dancers. These are not, you know.
I
mean, I think
ballet dancers aren't real people. Well, if you believe that ballet dancers are not real people, then you will believe Natalie Portman in this movie for sure.
Well, ballet exploitation.
I'm not sure what that means, but be that as it may, I thought she was a real person, a real ballet dancer person. I thought it was a terrific performance.
I thought it was a movie about ballet made by someone who knew nothing about ballet and didn't care to learn.
Well, I've just having done some reading on the commitment and the time and the effort put in by her physically and her in terms of studying the art, I had an appreciation for the effort of it. And I thought, I think if it is sort of the year of Natalie, I think she's going to win. If it wasn't, I would be gung-ho for Jennifer Lawrence in Winter's Bone. I thought in terms of subtlety of her performance, and I mean, that being the first thing I saw her in, she is this sort of quiet, damaged girl trying to rebuild her family. And then I got a chance to meet her at Sundance, and when I saw the film premiere, and she's this gorgeous sitcom star who's on the big Bill Engvall show, and it's shocking to see that this girl in this film, sort of where she went to for this movie.
Yeah, and she's done relatively little to this point. One of my best friends lives in Louisville, Kentucky, and the whole city's abuzz because, I mean, she's from there, and all of a sudden, boom, she's breaking out in this giant role. And we see, you know, the same as with Natalie Portman. I mean, Jennifer Lawrence is that entire film. I just wanted to recognize Nicole Kidman in Rabbit Hole. You know, the last few years that I've seen Nicole Kidman, she always just seems so harsh. And, you know,
that was the Botox
angles. It probably is a lot to do with it. But I saw more of a kind of a warmer, round performance from Nicole Kidman, I guess, despite the surgeries, et cetera.
I thought Michelle Williams was fantastic in Blue Valentine. I didn't think much of the movie, but she did a great job holding it together. She felt real and honest. But we should step back a bit and not talk about the artistry of the performances quite so much as the external factors, which often are paramount to winning an Oscar. Natalie Portman getting engaged to and impregnated by her choreographer, slash co-star, was a brilliant PR move. Absolutely brilliant. She's taken method acting and applied it to the Oscar campaign itself. She is irresistible. In this,
she had made a comment of that in her Golden Globe speech. It was kind of like her. It was kind of like her. I'm drawing a blank, but it was kind of just like a really, really bad speech where she said, "You know that cute guy who said he wouldn't sleep with me? Well, he is."
And then she laughed, apparently her laugh was
like a hyena
ridiculed.
Laugh. Yeah.
So we can hope for that another awkward moment from Natalie Portman.
Oh please!
Oscar.
As they say, if you don't knock up your protege, then you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, I remember that bumper sticker.
And Annette Bening, we're overlooking Annette Bening here.
Annette Bening.
Well, Kim mentioned Annette Bening.
This is a category which the pundits are split on to some extent. There are some who think that Annette Bening could pull the upset here, and she has been snubbed in the past. So it would be one of those occasions where you are righting past wrongs, as the Academy has done previously, but I think she's going to be snubbed again. If I were putting money on it or trying to win my Oscar pool, I would pick Natalie. And the reason, another reason is that the Academy loves ingenues. The women who win Best Actress, they win when they are young and beautiful. And Natalie Portman's right there. Annette Bening, probably, you know, she should have won for The Grifters or Bugsy or who knows. One of the things she did back in her... glamorous days.
Well, she's doing a comedy too, and the Academy for the lead roles always tend to prefer the drama. Supporting, well, I think comedy does have a better chance.
She's not funny in it.
Well, it is still a comedy.
She purses her lips and drinks lots of wine. I've seen Annette Bening do more interesting work, to be honest.
I feel like we're seeing the nominees for The Kids Are All Right. We're seeing an appreciation for the ensemble, for the across the board.
I
fantastic
loved Julianne
acting.
Moore. I thought she was genuinely funny and warm and interesting and spontaneous.
Well, wait, where's she on this list?
Yeah, she's not there.
All right, are we ready to move on to supporting actress?
Sure.
Okay. All right. And Kim, do you want to do the honors again, or remember to stay a little closer to the mic?
Sure. The nominees for Best Supporting Actress are Amy Adams in The Fighter, Helena Bonham Carter in The King's Speech, Melissa Leo in The Fighter, Haley Seinfeld in True Grit, and Jackie Weaver in Animal Kingdom.
Okay, I believe it's actually Haley Steinfeld. But that's okay. All right.
It's her first movie. No one knows her name yet.
And who knows? Maybe it was the Seinfeld-Steinfeld confusion that got her this far.
Well, Jerry never won any Emmys.
Should have been in True Grit.
No. I think there's going to be an upset. I mean, it could be, in this category, Haley Steinfeld. As far as a young actor, the dialect, the language is extremely precise. You can argue a little bit antiquated, but she gets it and she nails it. And for someone that young, she seems to possess an infinite amount of poise. My vote would be for Melissa Leo in The Fighter. She just suffered the difficulty a couple years ago of being nominated in the same category with Kate Winslet.
Right.
I thought her performance in Frozen River was unbelievable. Again, Winner's Bone, Frozen River, these gritty American neo-realistic films that, they're cold. Good summer viewing. Last night I saw Animal Kingdom, and Jackie Weaver gives one of the most deliciously sinister matriarch of a crime family performances.
She's sort of like an Australian Jane Lynch, is what you're saying.
Okay. Nurse Ratched in her 60s with an Australian accent.
And I feel like this is a category where the Academy has an openness to recognizing really young actresses. I think we've seen earlier. I'm thinking of The Piano. I'm thinking, did Jodie Foster get it before in the past? But this is one where there's an openness, at least, a sort of willingness.
Well, Tatum O'Neill won when she was 10, of course, Anna Paquin when she was 11 in The Piano. Certainly, and that's... and Will was asking us about this earlier. That's one reason, one of a few, why Haley Steinfeld is nominated as Best Supporting Actress and not Best Actress when she is indisputably the lead actress in the film. It's told from her point of view. She's in
virtually every scene.
And yet she's a supporting actress. Now, we can look at this, and as members of the public, it doesn't make any sense, but you have to remember that the 6,000... members of the Motion Picture Academy are not known for independent thought. They do what they're told, and in this case, they were told to nominate her as Best Supporting Actress. They were told that by Universal, which ran the ads in the trade papers saying, for your consideration, Haley Steinfeld, Best Supporting Actress, and
Paramount.
That's where
and
she
Melissa
is.
Leo
Paramount,
had her own
excuse me.
Ad campaign this week. It was she self-financed it. For your consideration, pictures of an older woman looking beautiful without Botox, et cetera. We'll see.
She's self-financed.
Yeah. And there's some back, and that's it's okay if the studio pays to run ads on your behalf, but it's not okay if you run your own ads. That's somehow crass. which these pictures of Melissa Leo, they're beautiful pictures, and they just say the word consider. They don't say anything about the movie. You don't have to be an idiot not to know what they're for.
Maybe that's the name of her next film. Or her perfume.
There's some, there's apparently a backlash to this. Now, I think the backlash is probably more a media creation than anything else. I think Melissa Leo has won the Screen Actors Guild Award, which is a very reliable arbiter or predictor of success. as it was last year, for example. All the acting categories matched up. So I think she is likely to win, and I love Melissa Leo. What's fun about Melissa Leo is she's a little rough around the edges. She had a difficult childhood. She didn't receive any formal education or training, and she's carved out a nice career for herself as a working actress, and now that she's gotten older, has gotten interesting character parts, the sort of thing that could have been coming to her all along, but now she's arrived.
Better late than never with her. I think I've really enjoyed seeing her act.
She was great on Homicide: Life on the Street in the 90s, one of the great crime dramas in television history.
I think if there's any room for an upset, it will be in this category. I'm thinking back to 2001, where Kate Hudson was considered the shoo-in for Best Supporting Actress for Almost Famous, and Marcia Gay Harden won, and that seemed to surprise everybody. I think if this was just based on merit alone and not campaigning, I think Jackie Weaver and Melissa Leo would be running neck and neck. They kind of played, in some ways, very similar characters, these very hardened matriarchs.
With bleached blonde hair.
Yeah. Although Jackie Weaver, I thought, was just so chilling.
Well, I think there were a lot of strong mother roles that you could even, you know, argue for supporting. I thought Diane Wiest was pretty good in Rabbit Hole.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Barbara Hershey was pretty good for Black Swan as well.
Oh my God!
Was Barbara Hershey nominated for a Razzie? Because she should have been. That and Owen Wilson in How Do You Know were the worst performances of 2010, in my opinion.
Well, thank you, Ben Knuckles. Support for NRN this hour is also coming from Alt Energy of Charlottesville, finding ways to use solar energy to reduce energy costs and reduce wear and tear on the earth. Alt Energy provides professionally designed solar hot water and photovoltaic electricity systems throughout Central Virginia and in the Shenandoah Valley. You can find out more at altenergyincorporated.com. It is the Oscar Show with our guest, Tom DeMontier, Adam Greenbaum, Ben Knuckles, Will Smith, Joe Babarski, and Kim, whose last name I don't know.
Lowe.
Kim Lowe. Thank you very much. All right. We've talked about people. Let's talk about actual films. I want to move over to foreign language films for just a moment.
That's going to be a...
You laugh.
I laugh only because probably between all of us, well, at least I've seen one of them.
Well, it's okay, not our fault, to be clear.
In
the Best Picture category, if we haven't seen any of the nominees, and there are a few I have not seen, we have no one to blame but ourselves, because these movies are all available, and even if they didn't play in your town, they are available on Netflix, and you can stream them, and you can download them, and you can do whatever. They're there for your enjoyment. But the foreign film nominating process is incredibly corrupt. We've described the marketing that goes into nominating actors, but foreign films is just a nightmare. It's the countries decide which films are nominated. Each country can only submit one film for consideration for best foreign film, and so it's politicized, and it's a decision that's made in back rooms, and you get movies that everyone thinks are tremendous that are not even eligible to be nominated because their countries, for whatever reason, choose not to submit them.
Was Micmac last year, the Jean-Pierre Jeunet heist film?
Was it nominated for...
Did that come out last year?
I'm not sure. It doesn't matter when it came out. It matters what year France decides to submit it as a potential nominee. Hmm. I don't believe France did submit that movie as a potential nominee.
Well, let's actually... We've been talking for a minute about the foreign films, and we still don't know what they are. So, Ben, you want to jump in
with
the list?
Yes, they are... Beautiful, which
beautiful.
And that's how it's pronounced. Come on, it's the Spanish word. You have to pronounce it that way so people know. It's Beautiful is set in Spain. It was shot in Spain. It has a Spanish cast. It's Mexico's submission.
Okay.
Now, the director is from Mexico. I imagine that much of his crew is from Mexico, but it was a Mexican-Spanish co-production. So you make sense of that. Dogtooth, which is from Greece. In a Better World, I believe that's from Denmark. Incendies, don't remember. And Outside the Law. I didn't know we were going to be discussing this category, so, Sean. You've thrown us a curveball. Outside the Law is the last nominee. I think that the pundits, the observers of this category, have said that In a Better World from Denmark has a good chance of winning because it's a sort of sprawling multi-continent issue film with this, the sort of thing that the Academy tends to like. Suzanne Beer is the director. She's well known in this sort of in the specialty film market in the United States. She's had some modest successes, so that could be it. Beautiful is the one that most people have seen in this category because it actually was released. Dogtooth was it played in art houses over the summer. It has some fans. It's apparently very strange.
I've read some articles about that. It's very disturbing and kind of off kilter in a kind of.
Got somebody who's seen Dogtooth here.
Yeah, is Joe. I did get a chance to see Dogtooth, and it's sort of like a Greek Michael Haneke film. You don't understand. It's fascinating, but I honestly think I would vote for something else, have that being the one that I have seen.
Yeah.
You don't know the character. You don't know the reason for what you're watching or anyone's motivation, and it's alternately sort of disturbing and darkly hilarious. So
is it art for art's sake? One of those sort of films?
It's one of those. It's almost painful to watch, and yet you can't tear your eyes away from it. So what's funny is, see it because. Even if you don't like it, it is sort of fascinating.
Unlike Beautiful, which is painful to watch, and you can tear your eyes away from it.
So Adam Greenbaum, if local people here in Central Virginia wanted to see Beautiful, where would they go?
Oh, they could go to Vinegar Hill Theater in downtown Charlottesville.
Excellent. All right, I'm going to take that plug and give you another break, and we're going to switch to some underwriting.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
In this week's Hook, the man who donned a vampire mask one Halloween night and attacked his estranged wife as she slept has been set free after more than 6 years behind bars. According to the chatter overheard in the Ragged Mountain Farm neighborhood, somebody decided to burn some brush on a red flag day when high winds and dry conditions led to a fire that destroyed a barn, ruined dozens of hay bales, and blackened vast swaths of fields and forests. And though he got outbid by a bank, the man known as the Donald hasn't given up his quest to buy the properties recently lost by Patricia Kluge, New York real estate tycoon and reality television star. Donald Trump may still scoop up all the former Kluge properties, including Albemarle House, the storied mansion that went on the auction block Wednesday morning. The Hook. Still cheaper than a night at the movies. All right. And support today is also from Sugar Snap, offering gently used baby and kid items, including shoes, hats, nursing pillows, plus maternity and nursing clothes. Also at Sugar Snap, you'll find cloth diapers, diaper bags, nursery gear, and locally made items. A kid-friendly play area is available while you shop. You can become a fan of Sugar Snap on Facebook or Twitter. More is at sugarsnapconsignment.com. All right, we're back. On the air with the Oscar show, and sorry I threw you for a loop last time.
Well, that's okay. And by the way, the foreign films every once in a while we can quibble with the nominating process, which is absurd. But the Academy does sometimes get it right in terms of picking the winner. Mm-hmm. Pan's Labyrinth won for best foreign film, and last year
it win. I thought Lives of Others.
Lives of Others.
Oh, you're right. Well,
yeah.
Let's see that.
Which
okay.
actually,
well,
I
Lives of Others was another great movie. Mm-hmm. Those two were you couldn't really go wrong with either of those. But last year, The Secret in Their Eyes won best foreign film. Mm-hmm. Nobody had seen it, it was great. It was one of my favorites of 2010. Once it finally made it to U.S. screens, everybody realized why it had won. And you don't know who's voting in that category either, because you have to have seen all the movies in order to vote. So
Oscar
most people in the Academy can't be bothered.
May mean that you will actually get to see that foreign film. Mm-hmm. It may get a wider release.
Well, it may get a release at all.
Well, I mean, Secret in Their Eyes, I think we got at Vinegar Hill in May. So
nice
it
job.
It takes a little while. Yeah. Well,
we've got so few reels to pass around.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we're in the last quarter of the hour. So I'm gonna save the best picture and best director towards the end. Towards
okay.
the end. Let's go to categories you all have opinion on. Let's go to makeup. No, I'm kidding. I'll tell you what. Let me throw it to the floor. What category would you like to talk about?
I mean, I and I. being the youngest in the room, is it tempting to bring it up? I honestly think animated feature is a fascinating one. Having seen all three of these, they are all fantastic movies in entirely different ways.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt you for just a second, because because this has been bothering me. Why do we have 10 best pictures and 3 animated features? Were only 3 animated films made last year?
No, but there's not a huge field of potential nominees for best animated film. I think 3 is a fair number of. I don't think you're going to have huge snubs having 3 nominees for best animated film. And you want to know why you have 10 best picture nominees? The answer is easy: pandering. Mm-hmm. Pandering to the audience, pandering to the youth market who buy the products that are advertised in the commercials that are shown on the Academy Awards broadcast, which you can see on the big high-def screen downtown in Charlottesville.
But I would argue this year you have 10 films that are all pretty adult films that also had a certain level of box office success. Mm-hmm. And since 1995, the demographic for, you know, older viewers, I guess with the boomers, you know, reaching their 50s and 60s, you know, has gone up, you know, 65% or 60%. So it is important.
Joe, I interrupted you. Can you jump in and tell us what those animated features are?
Those are How to Train Your Dragon, The Illusionist from France, and Toy Story 3. And I mean, Toy Story 3 is going to win, but if you haven't seen How to Train Your Dragon, I thought it was just a straight kids film when it came out, and I heard all the people talking about it. I saw it recently, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was really, to me, it was like Avatar, but intentionally schmaltzy, so it was okay.
I thought it was cynical, commercial, made by computers for people who don't think. It was a very calculated commercial product that did well at the box office because that's what it was designed to do. Sylvain Chomet, who directed The Illusionist, is a visionary. The Triplets of Belleville was a wonderful movie. Yeah. The Illusionist is not yet playing on very many screens around the country, but I'm intrigued by that one.
See, it has maybe 3 lines almost throughout the almost no dialogue throughout. It's like looking at an absolutely beautifully drawn, evocative children's book, and it's a beautiful movie to watch. It's really touching.
Well, you know, this category isn't hard to predict who's going to win, because if you have an animated movie that's also nominated for Best Picture, then it's going to win in the animated category. Right. That
it's also
pretty clear what the Academy thinks of it.
Also, if you have a movie by Pixar that's not Cars, it's going to take it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
often
we all,
deservedly so.
We all want to see Buzz Lightyear jump up on stage and hug the mic.
Just like Rob Lowe and Snow White?
No. I actually thought, since they gave a nomination to How to Train Your Dragon, I thought Despicable Me could have been easily included in that category.
Right.
I actually liked it. I thought it was very appealing. I thought it was had a great message without being overly schmaltzy. And I saw the film with absolutely no illusions whatsoever. So. Yeah.
And where's Megamind? Why isn't Megamind on the list? All right. Do we want to talk about documentaries?
No, we got to get...
Or screenplays? Do we have time?
Well, we can do screenplays.
Let's do screenplays. Original screenplays. Who suggested screenplays? Who wants to read the list? Tell you what, I'll read the list. The nominees for original screenplay are Another Year, The Fighter, Inception, The Kids Are All Right, and The King's Speech. All of these sound very familiar. We've talked about all of these except Another Year.
Well, Mike Lee is a perennial Oscar nominee, and he always gets nominated in the screenplay category, which is funny to me because his movies aren't written in any kind of conventional way. He workshops with his actors for 6 weeks and has them develop their characters. He comes up with the idea, and then he and the actors fill in the plot and the dialogue. So it's funny. He's always nominated for Best Original Screenplay as a way to recognize his work because he is an artist and he deserves recognition. But still, he's not going to win either. This is The King's Speech was, by the way, nominated in 12 categories. The Academy loves it, and it will win many, many Oscars, and this will be one of them.
Well, I think it deserves Best Screenplay. I have not seen Another Year, so I can't say. But speaking of the others, I think of the original screenplays, The King's Speech was tight. The pacing was good. I think it deserves it. Hey, David Sidler's been working on the thing for 50 years.
You know, I I think it's going to win, but I don't know that I can count it as my favorite. I think The Kids Are All Right as an ensemble piece. The screenplay really yeah. structured it in a beautiful way that highlighted all these different characters, made them seem incredibly genuine.
You could say the same thing with The Fighter, I thought, as well, too. Another just rich ensemble piece and a great boxing film as well.
So how does it work? Explain this for the viewers. You know, Hollywood produces hundreds of films, and yet you get single films that they just dominate, you know, cross categories. I mean, King's Speech, okay, great performances, fine screenplay, fine directing. Why is it also listed for sound mixing and original score?
Well, there is lots of sound in it.
Yes.
There's talking and
there's a lot of
stuttering.
Echoing radio.
Yeah, there's radio. It's you know, someone worked very hard. It comes down to as I said earlier, the lack of independent thought. The Academy gets creates these juggernauts because the studios market these films. The Oscars have become, someone put it well, in they are a marketing tool for specialty films. They're a marketing tool for the sort of movies that Hollywood would like to make, but most of the time they don't make because they don't make money. These are the ones that make money. These are the specialty films that make money and allow studios to make other specialty films. They keep it going. They keep cinema with a modicum of intelligence being produced. And so the Oscars exist to highlight these kinds of movies that adults might want to see. The King's Speech, for example, is it's topped 100 million at the box office, right. And the audience is older mostly. It's
Yeah, yeah.
It appeals to baby boomers and even and across the board.
And also the way that, you know, the ballots are set up when because these big films employ a lot of people. So there's kind of an incentive because the nominations come from people in the industry. There's a nomination to kind of front load them and you know, hey, I worked on that film. I was the assistant makeup artist. What a nice thing to be able to say in the future. Okay, we're getting towards the end. We've been holding off on the last categories. It was pointed out to me that I handed out copies of the official Oscar ballot to everybody, and under directing, we've got the films listed, but we don't have the actual directors listed.
So, I mean, cares who directed them, right? That's not important.
If need be.
Yeah, Will, why don't you jump in give us the films and the directors.
All right, where is the category? It's all over the place.
Second column.
Directing, okay. All right, we've got Black Swan, the director Darren Aronofsky, The Fighter, directed by David O. Russell, King's Speech, directed by Tom Hooper, The Social Network, directed by David Fincher, and True Grit, directed by Ethan Coen.
Right. Joel and Ethan.
Joel and Ethan.
They decided they used to split up their credits, and only Joel got credit for directing, but now they are both credited as directors.
Okay, Joel and Ethan Coen.
Okay, Will, you've got the mic. You got some spoilers in here?
I'm pretty sure it's going to go to Tom Hooper, but I mean, I would really like to see Aronofsky get it. I'm a huge fan of his catalog, and I would like to see him get it. I think it's between Tom Hooper and David O. Russell at this point.
No. It's between Tom Hooper and
David Fincher.
Fincher.
Is it?
Absolutely. And a lot of people think there will be a split this year, and that Fincher will win Best Director, and that The King's Speech will win Best Picture. That doesn't happen very often. It's happened 3 times in the past 10 years. Normally, the Best Director winner goes to the better movie, especially in 2003 when Roman Polanski won for directing The Pianist, which was a masterpiece, and Chicago, which was utterly forgettable, won Best Picture. But the split doesn't happen that often because if the Academy loves a film, they love the director. So I think Tom Hooper is slightly more likely to win than Fincher. I wouldn't be surprised, and I'd certainly be pleased to see Fincher win. But the idea that you're predicting a split in this in the top two categories is hard to back up.
Mm-hmm. I would agree that Aronofsky for Black Swan, in terms of just this sort of talking about the artistry of the film, but talking about the editing, talking about this kind of stylized quality of the film, that I thought that, and again, Aronofsky hit with some incredible films that he built himself a great career with relatively few films.
I thought Black Swan had the emotional intelligence of a screaming 3-year-old, and that he is by far the least deserving person in this category. Fincher
well,
did
I just think that I just think that you feel I think that he's got scope as a director. I mean, he's spanned so many like genres and ideas. In 10 years.
Kim?
Yeah. 15.
Kim, closer to the microphone.
I think that Aronofsky could be the dark horse because I don't believe he was nominated for Requiem for a Dream He wasn't nominated for Pi, nor was he nominated for The Wrestler, and those were three films, arguably, where he could have easily been nominated for Best Director, and even won, especially for Requiem.
I'd say the thing about Black Swan that I like, and I probably like the film because I don't think melodrama is a bad word. One of my favorite directors is Douglas Sirk. I like David Lynch, and I feel like it's a really bleak, dark melodrama. And say what you will about the emotional intelligence of the film, I feel like the performances are matched to the scale of the film. And I think sometimes those things are not always necessarily in sync.
And I think it is a fantastic combination of a psychological thriller, this kind of intense emotional film, but it's also Aronofsky somehow made it very palatable for the movie-going audiences. I mean, the most immediate film that I think of in thinking about it is Polanski's Repulsion, not a film that you think of having a mass appeal. And here is one that people can't keep out of the theaters to see.
All right, we're coming up on the last 5 minutes. I want to remind you that today's programming on WNRN is also being brought to you with the support of Blue Ridge Graphics at Mead Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 434-296-9746, and at brgtshirts.com. I see Drew Thompson is in the studio. He's going to be playing Less Than Purdue in 5 minutes. So in these last 5 minutes, let's talk about Best Picture. And I will go ahead and read the nominees. They're all going to sound very familiar. We've talked about all of these already. They are Black Swan, The Fighter. Actually, I don't think we've talked about The Fighter much. Inception, The Kids Are All Right, The King's Speech, 127 Hours, The Social Network, Toy Story 3, True Grit, and Winter's Bone.
Could I just say that before we make our predictions...
Adam Greenbaum.
Yes. Last year, Tom, Ben, and myself all predicted with 100% certainty that Avatar was going to win.
And remind us
what happened. Take our opinions
with a grain of salt. I don't think.
Play back the tape.
I think we said we weren't sure.
No.
Well, the Academy, I mean, like with Avatar, I mean, well, last year, I guess Avatar would have been it was hard to say a safe choice. I think we're looking at these, and the Academy is usually going to make the safe decision. So that's why we're all saying The King's Speech, probably with this category.
Avatar wasn't nominated in any acting categories.
That's true.
It's very rare for a Best Picture winner not to be nominated in any acting categories, for what it's worth. Although I don't know that The Hurt Locker was, of course. Jeremy Renner was nominated.
Okay, no one's talking about The Social Network. Go ahead,
I think The Social Network could actually win this. I think that especially if Fincher does not get Best Director, I think The Social Network could do that because it was one of these films that I think would be recognized because of the fact that it was very much a picture focusing on this time. And also Jesse Eisenberg gave an excellent performance, and even though he was nominated, it never seemed like he was actually in the race.
And Aaron Sorkin's adapted screenplay is likely to win screenplay.
Sorkin, so it does sort of slam dunk.
It has the sort of foundation that would be needed to make it to upset The King's Speech.
If Sorkin wins for screenplay and Fincher wins for director, I mean, why not? I guess it just is determined if the Academy's going to be progressive and go with Social Network, or if it's going to be kind of the dry, a little fuddy-duddy British picture, which they love that stuff, you know, person overcoming a handicap. British accents.
How common is an Academy hat trick like that? Like the getting all three.
Oh, it happens, but it's usually not the better movie, which in this case, The Social Network is the better movie. But it won't. But I don't think it's. I don't think it's likely. I think The Social Network does have a chance. David Fincher has a chance. He's a great filmmaker. He is a truly first-rate artist. Tom Hooper is not. I'm sorry. There are choices he makes in The King's Speech that are highly questionable. The lenses he uses, the unnecessary camera angles things thrown in. I mean, it's just no. It's not. It's not.
The director
chooses when the cinematographer doesn't overrule him and say we're shooting all these dialogue scenes with wide angle lenses. That's the director's choice, and it's strange, and it doesn't add anything. He's a bit of an insecure, show-offy kind of director, and David Fincher, who has certainly shown off a lot in his career, plays it very straight in The Social Network and allows Sorkin's screenplay to get you inside the heads of these interesting, smart, socially awkward people.
All right, Ben, you've been kind of quiet and restrained through this whole show, so I'm going to give you a gift for the last minute and ask you to tell us your thoughts on Inception.
Inception is one of those movies that appears to be more intelligent than it is. It's not a movie that will reward you if you go back and try to figure it out, because there's nothing to figure out. It's just it's a video game. It's silly.
There's a video game coming out, actually.
Drivel.
I thought it was stylish and fun, but by no means an Academy.
I mean, from start to finish with these 10 nominees.
I wish Terry Gilliam would have directed it.
I have to say, it makes me feel a little bit better about the state of movies today. If you look at these are 10 films that are across the board, I really enjoyed and
good.
Thought were of very high quality.
If there was to be an upset, I would love it to be Toy Story 3. I don't think I cried that much since the finale of 6 Feet Under.
I cried so much. I'm right with you there. I don't know if it was
both
like
times I saw it, too.
Whatever age I was when the first Toy Story came out, just to like watch it through. It got me right there.
It's good stuff.
Okay, all right. We're gonna close and just gonna go across the line, starting with Joe. Shout out each of you, your favorite picture, whether or not it's on the list, just your favorite picture this year. Joe, go ahead.
I'm gonna say Winter's Bone.
All right, Tom.
I'm gonna go with Black Swan, but also loved Buried with Ryan Reynolds.
Ben.
Well, I love The Fighter among the nominees, but I will go with Martin Scorsese's lurid, strange, wonderful psychological thriller, Shutter Island. Very overlooked.
Nicely done. Adam.
Winter's Bone.
Kim.
Social Network.
Will.
I'm going to be the weird one. I've got a tie. Toy Story 3 and Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Nice. Okay. Gentlemen, lady, everybody, all the people in the studio, all the friends and families, thank you all very much for being here. This has been fun. The hour has gone by quickly. Look forward. I'm hopeful to seeing you all next year. Drew Thompson is in the studio with Less Than Purdue. This is Sean McCord sitting in for Rick Moore, and we'll see you at the movies.
I enjoyed it.